Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for April 10th, 2012. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and in this show we'll be focusing on the biology of astrocytes, which are cells that support neurons and modulate neurotransmission, though they themselves don't generate electrical signals. Neurons transmit all the electrical signals in the nervous system, but they couldn't do their jobs, or at least not do them well, without the help of glia. There are several types of cells that are collectively known as glia, and each type plays a distinct role in supporting neurons. Schwann cells and oligodendrocytes secrete the myelin sheaths that electrically insulate neurons. Ependymal cells produce the cerebrospinal fluid that protects the central nervous system. And microglia are sort of like the central nervous system's immune cells, in that they eat pathogens. Astrocytes are the most common type of glia in the brain, and they help neurons function properly by providing them with nutrients, regulating blood flow, and helping clean up excess ions that could cause neurons to misfire. But they also communicate with other cells by releasing chemical signals like ATP and glutamate, and they generate intracellular waves of calcium that are propagated to other astrocytes through gap junctions. As their name suggests, they're star-shaped, and they use their long processes to associate with neurons and blood vessels. Today I'll be talking with two authors of studies on calcium signaling in astrocytes that were recently published in Science Signaling. I'll talk to Maiken Niedergaard, whose studies have elucidated how calcium signaling mediates communication between neurons and glia, and I'll also talk to Katsuhiko Mikishiba, whose new study demonstrates how individual processes on the same astrocyte can regulate target cells independently of one another and independently of the astrocyte's cell body. First, Dr. Niedergaard from the University of Rochester Medical School in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dr. Niedergaard.
Thank you.
In a study that was published in a January issue of Science Signaling, your group demonstrated that astrocytes release ATP when the local extracellular environment becomes depleted of calcium. Why is it important for an astrocyte to detect a local decrease in calcium?
So the thing about the brain is that neurons and astrocytes are mingled up among each other. So they are side to side, not only at the cell body, but also the processes. And one of the primary things that occur in brain when you have synaptic transmission is that calcium flows into the nerve cells, basically via AMPA receptors and voltage-gated calcium channels. And that in turn causes a decrease in extracellular calcium. So you can look at extracellular calcium as an integrator of excitatory transmission. And it seems to be a very clever way that astrocytes detect that, and that is just by basically being able to detect local decreases in extracellular calcium, and then they're releasing ATP that primarily activate themselves, so it's an autocrine process, but also local microglia cells. So ATP is a transmitter that primarily signals from astrocyte to astrocyte and not from astrocyte to neuron.
What does that ATP signal do?
It probably does several things, but one of the immediate things is it increases intracellular calcium, which are the primary intracellular signaling pathways that basically drive astrocytic functions.
And then in turn, what do those intracellular waves of calcium do in the astrocytes?
So this is what I think our newspaper is about. So in the second publication, we show that increases in intracellular calcium increases uptake of extracellular potassium. So why is that important? Extracellular potassium is basically the primary determinant of neuronal excitability. So neurons, as you know, function by generating action potential. And an action potential is generated when the membrane potential reaches the threshold for activation of voltage-gated sodium channels. So if you change extracellular potassium, if it goes up, a neuron would depolarize and it would fire more action potential. If you remove potassium, it would be less likely to fire. So it's a very important way of regulating neuronal activity.
So essentially that initial depletion of calcium that's caused by neuronal firing ends up activating a chain of events that then represses neuronal activity.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's an effect, a negative feedback. So if you have increased excitatory transmission, which typically seen in epileptic seizure, astrocyte will try to prevent that from spreading or from being sustained.
So you mentioned that this activity of astrocytes can sort of prevent hyperactivation, as in like epileptic seizures.
Yeah, it's a negative feedback. And of course, this is important if you start to look at the diseased brain, for example, in epilepsy, where you could imagine that a defect signaling pathway in astrocyte might be less efficient in downregulating neuronal activity. Once we have discovered a physiological signaling pathway, the really interesting part comes trying to understand when it's not working.
When glial cells were first described, and for many years thereafter, they were just thought of as kind of support cells that glued neurons together or helped them survive, but they didn't really contribute to signaling through neural networks.
Yes, the glial cell was for the last 50 years probably regarded as a passive housekeeper that only acted on demand, and it was passive. Basically, if extracellular potassium increased during neuronal activity, the glial cell would sop it up and maintain normal level of extracellular potassium. So the new trend has been in the field, and this is probably the last 15 years, has been to try to implicate astrocyte in more than just housekeeping function. So basically trying to discover pathways by which astrocyte can modulate neural network and thereby contribute to higher cognitive functions. And for me in particular, this is a really interesting topic because we have been studying human astrocyte. And one thing that's characteristic about human brain is that astrocyte have expanded in size and complexity and also in gene expression by 20 to 30 fold. So if you look at a human astrocyte, it actually spanned a volume that's almost 30 times larger than it is in a rodent brain. And you can imagine that astrocyte during evolution have taken additional role, and maybe part of our information processing actually occur in astrocyte, and they're not just modulating synaptic activity. So if you look at astrocyte and astrocyte domain as the endpoint for processing of information, you can imagine that a 30-fold bigger volume would be 30-fold more capable of integrating so much more information. And this could be one factor contributing to the ability of the human brain to really function at a much higher level than even higher primates.
Are there subtypes of astrocytes that differ in their morphology or their gene expression patterns? For example, you just mentioned that there are a lot more astrocytes in humans than in rodents, and they have a much greater expanded transcriptional profile.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any differences within astrocytes that make different subtypes?
Yeah, there are, and it's starting to take off now, describing the heterogeneity of astrocytes. So probably each astrocyte is actually a little different from the neighbor because astrocyte typically would express the receptors the nearby neurons express. For example, a spinal cord astrocyte express glycine receptors. That's because neurons in spinal cord express glycine receptors. And similar astrocyte located around inhibitory neurons would express GABA receptors. And astrocyte are also very influenced by the vasculature, so most likely astrocyte surrounding arteries differ from astrocyte surrounding veins. But it's first now that the technical ability is such that we can start to approach it. One thing that is known is, for example, that the morphology of astrocyte varies by quite a bit from area to area. For example, in cerebellum, the Bergman glia cells are very elongated cells that only send processes out one direction. And there's other examples on just the morphological heterogeneity of astrocytes.
Thank you, Dr. Niedergaard, for speaking with me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Katsuhiko Mikoshiba's group also studies calcium signaling in astrocytes. In a study published in the April 3rd issue of Science Signaling, Mikoshiba's group described a mechanism by which calcium signaling may be enhanced specifically in the processes of astrocytes compared to the cell body. These findings have implications for understanding how astrocytes could regulate brain function. Mikoshiba spoke to me from the Riken Brain Institute in Saitama, Japan. Mikoshiba is also a member of Science Signaling's editorial board and the board of reviewing editors. Welcome, Dr. Mikoshiba.
Hi, Annalisa. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Stimulation of metabotropic glutamate receptors on astrocytes causes calcium waves inside the astrocytes. And in this study, you found that stimulating whole astrocytes with a chemical that activates these receptors initiated intracellular calcium waves in the processes, but not in the soma, the body of the astrocyte. Why did the cells only make calcium waves in the processes?
The astrocytes initiated intracellular calcium waves in the processes because processes have higher density of mGlu5, metabotropic glutamate receptor 5, that induces calcium release from the intracellular calcium stores called endoplasmic reticulum, ER. In this study, we demonstrated that both soma and processes had the ability to generate calcium waves. The heterogeneous distribution of functional calcium-releasing machinery is not behind the initiation of calcium waves in the processes. In contrast, the density of mGlu5 on the cell surface was strikingly higher in the astrocytic processes compared with the soma. This finding well explains why the astrocyte generates calcium waves only in the processes. In essence, the astrocyte enriches mGlu5 to the processes as a means to localize and concentrate the production of IP3. Ultimately, it is IP3 in the processes that triggers the opening of IP3 receptor and the release of calcium from the intracellular stores. We became convinced of the importance of mGlu5 distribution from experiments in which mGlu5s were evenly distributed throughout the cell by expressing C-terminus of mGlu5. In this set of experiments, the calcium waves no longer started at the processes, but rather started simultaneously across the entire cell. We therefore consider the mGlu5 distribution pattern to be one of the important factors determining the site of calcium wave initiation in astrocytes. The geometry of the astrocyte may also explain why calcium waves initiated only at the process, as was shown in previous studies using neuroblastoma or Bergman glial cells. The processes of the astrocytes are much thinner. In other words, the process has much larger surface-to-volume ratio than the cell body. Therefore, IP3 produced by mGlu5 activation could be more concentrated at the process relative to the soma.
The calcium waves were generated only in the processes and not in the soma. Were there differences in the calcium waves between the individual processes, or did all of the processes behave the same?
Although we did not include it in the current paper, we have data showing that the first of the processes to respond in a given astrocyte was the largest process in area. We think this result could have interesting implications to the signaling strategies employed by astrocytes and how they spatially regulate calcium waves. If one process of an astrocyte wants to have a higher possibility to generate calcium waves to reinforce the signal transmission at that site, the astrocyte can simply enlarge the process. Whether this is the case or not should be examined in future studies.
The calcium waves are restricted to the processes by the increased abundance of mGlu5 in the processes as compared to the soma. How are the receptors targeted to the processes, and how are they kept there? How are they kept from moving from the processes back to the soma?
We still do not know how the receptors are targeted to the processes, but we do now know how the receptors are kept there. We discovered that mGlu5 are kept at the process by a diffusion barrier which blocks a receptor transition between process and soma. Importantly, we proved that this diffusion barrier is actually critical to constrain calcium wave initiation to the processes. When we made it possible for mGluR5s to overcome the diffusion barrier, mGluR5 distribution became homogeneous, and calcium waves were initiated not only in the process, but also in the soma. It is striking that a cell regulates its calcium signaling by contributing receptor dynamics in this way. It will be fascinating to find out if other cell types employ this strategy, the regulation of calcium signal by controlling receptor dynamics.
Do you know the nature of that barrier? And how specific is that barrier? Can other membrane proteins freely diffuse between the processes in the soma, but only certain molecules, for example, mGluR5, are restricted from diffusing?
So I think it's a very good question, which we are interested in solving in future studies. Although we could not fully identify the molecular nature of the diffusion barrier, our data presented here, together with our unpublished results, will provide insight into the mechanism of diffusion barrier. Firstly, this soma process diffusion barrier was independent of actin cytoskeleton. Secondly, we showed in this study that the diffusion barrier is not valid for other membrane molecules such as phospholipids and a purinergic receptor such as P2X7 receptors. More strikingly, we also found that even mGluR5 itself can overcome the diffusion barrier when the interaction with intracellular binding partners were inhibited.
You've shown that different processes on the same astrocyte can independently generate calcium waves.
Yes.
And that implies that each process can independently regulate a different target cell. How could this compartmentalization of calcium signals contribute to astrocyte regulation of neuronal function?
That's a great question. One astrocyte contacts more than 100,000 synapses from multiple neurons, and astrocytes can regulate synaptic transmission through its calcium signals. How far our calcium signal can reach must be important to determine how many synapses are simultaneously regulated. For the moment, how many neurons are contacted by one process of an astrocyte remains controversial. But we can imagine that a highly compartmentalized calcium signal in a single process would affect only a few neighboring neurons around the process. On the other hand, a global calcium signal that recruits all processes of the astrocyte would influence a much larger number of neurons. In addition to local and global intracellular calcium signals, astrocyte can generate intercellular calcium waves that spread between astrocytes over distances.
You're stimulating the receptors in culture on the whole cells.
Yes.
But in vivo, it's certainly feasible, if not likely, that stimulation is going to be limited to one process or a couple of processes.
Yes, that is, I think, a very important question for us, because all the experiments were done in the culture system. So we are now just started to work in vivo system in three-dimensional manner. So that is in vivo imaging analysis of calcium signaling in astrocytes is really, really important.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mikishiba, for speaking with me.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you, Annalisa. Finally, I just would like to mention that this study was done with Miss Arizono and Hiroko Banai and myself, Mikishiba. Thank you.
That was Maiken Niedergaard and Katsuhiko Mikishiba, authors of research articles published in recent issues of Science Signaling. Niedergaard's group published a paper titled Extracellular Calcium Acts as a Mediator of Communication from Neurons to Glia in the January 24th issue, and another titled Astrocytes Modulate Neural Network Activity by Calcium-Dependent Uptake of Extracellular Potassium in the April 3rd issue. The paper from Mikishiba's group also appeared in the April 3rd issue, and it's titled Receptor Selective Diffusion Barrier Enhances Sensitivity of Astrocytic Processes to Metabotropic Glutamate Receptor Stimulation. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.